Thank you for listening to the New Hope Christian Church podcast for the weekend of March 21st, 2021. This week's sermon is titled, Called It, More Than a Feeling, by Associate Pastor David Chase.
When is the time you called your shot? You said, like, for example, I'm going to make this pop can in that trash can from here. Hello, and welcome to New Hope Online. I'm Dave Chase. I'm so happy that you're joining us today. As we get closer to Easter, we're looking at some of the places where Jesus, he called his shot. But his shots sounded a lot crazier than, like, a game of horse. Have you ever played a game of horse? You know, are we all on the same page? You know what a game of horse is in basketball? It's a game, the whole game is where the whole point is that you have to call your shot. I'm going to make my shot from here. I'm going to make it kneeling. And then you have to, the other person has to reciprocate and make that same shot. Maybe some of you remember this blast from the past. Hopefully I'm not dating myself too much as an example of horse.
This is for your Big Mac, right? First one that misses
watches the winner eat lunch. Got it.
Off the glass. Get in.
Nice shot.
One knee.
Which knee?
No.
Get in there.
Off the floor, off the scoreboard, off the bang board, no rim.
Over the second rafter, off the floor, nothing but net. Through the window, off the wall, nothing but net.
What you want is what you get, and the tide of the day.
Off the expressway, over the river, off the billboard, through the window, off the wall, nothing but net.
That is great, isn't it? Well, maybe it was funnier than I remember it. But I still remember that commercial and some of the spinoffs even that they did. I'm not even a basketball guy, but I remember that commercial. I also remember watching movies with, like, our family. And I love the whodunit type of movies. The Sherlock Holmes, the Agatha Christie movies, the Alfred Hitchcock movies. Now, my dad, he was always, and there's probably somebody in your family like this too, he's always guessed the plot right away. He knew who done it and would amaze us all by calling it out. Well, to be fair, actually, most of the time he would keep it to himself, and that was awesome of him. He would not ruin the movie for us. But you could tell by the smile on his face that just happened that he caught it. And you wanted to be the one that would get it before him. Are you that person in your family? Or maybe not, if not, who is that person in your family? There are other people that they just seem to have, like, this gift of, like, almost prophecy, because they make these predictions and you've just stopped betting against them. Well, I know. You're not a betting person. You've stopped contradicting them because whatever they see, it just seems to come true. This last year, many of you know I love New Year's resolutions. Well, every year at New Year's, I kind of make, like, this sort of time capsule, put some stuff in an envelope. And this year, I wrote down some, like, funny predictions of 2021. Like, the Panthers are going to win the Super Bowl. And right away now, I've lost all my credibility with everybody because you all see I don't have the gift of prophecy. Many of you know about, like, Dude Perfect on YouTube, and they make, like, their whole living off of calling ridiculous, impossible trick shots, right? And Jesus, he called his shot. He called his shot, he called his shot over and over and over and over again, which is why we're able to make a series out of it. As Carrie has pointed out over the last 2 weeks, and we've seen a couple instances, if you've tuned in online or you've seen him in person, the last 2 weeks, he's seen Carrie talking about some of the instances where Jesus called his death and resurrection. He was calling his shot. A lot of those places, he looked at two instances in Mark. Today we're going to be in Luke. But before we get there, let's take a look. Before we get to, like, our main passage, I want us to take a look at Jesus calling his shot one more time. It's just because it's so amazing. So Luke chapter 18, you can turn there. I'm turning there. Grab your Bible. Get there. It'll be great. We'll all read it together. Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18, verse 31.
Jesus took the 12 aside and told them, "We are going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written by the prophets about the Son of Man will be fulfilled. He will be handed over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, insult him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. On the third day, he will rise again." This is the point in Dude Perfect when everybody goes crazy. Because we know on the other end of this, the disciples, it says in verse 34, the disciples did not understand any of this. Its meaning was hidden from them, and they did not know what he was talking about. But we all know what he was talking about. We, as we approach Easter, we celebrate where Jesus did this exact thing. It's like we throw up our hands and we go crazy like the Dude Perfect guys did, because Jesus just called his shot and he nailed it. How do you have control over other people that you know that they will do all of these things? Once again, I mean, this is a third week, Jesus calls his death and resurrection. He calls his shot. Don't read over how crazy that is. Now, I don't care who it is. If someone at your work or school, they do that, they call their own death and resurrection, maybe you should pay attention to them. But if you've come the last couple weeks, you watched online the last couple weeks, this is old news. Maybe you're a complete cynic, and maybe Jesus got lucky. I don't know how somebody can get lucky by calling a public execution for themselves and then the time frame of their resurrection. But whatever, maybe it's you're a big cynic. A little later, Jesus is getting ready to enter Jerusalem, and he's going to call even another big shot. He's going to call his shot. It's going to be crazy, and he's kind of a big deal by now. Okay, so people are ready to be free of the tyranny of Rome, the Roman Empire. They want they're really ready for a Messiah. They're all looking for a Messiah that will come. They think the time is right that a Messiah will come and free them from the Roman Empire, from a government. And is Jesus the person that will do so? Maybe he is. Now, because of the Passover, Jerusalem is packed wall to wall with all these Jews who have come to celebrate. If they've not seen Jesus themselves, they've definitely heard of him. Everyone has. And when entering a city, a king will come in on a horse if he is there in conquering and in conquest and in victory, or he will come in on a donkey if he comes in on peace. And so Jesus is riding in on a donkey. Again, all the people have heard of him. Maybe they've seen him, and they're going crazy with this celebration. Again, Jerusalem is packed wall to wall. All these people are just exiting Jerusalem like they would for a king that's coming in, and they're celebrating. Here he is, Jesus, he's coming. And they're rolling out the red carpet. They're laying down palm trees. They're taking off their coats and putting them down. It's like, hey, we're extending this red carpet. We're celebrating you as the wanted king to come on in here, and they're praising Jesus, and he's riding in on victory. I can't imagine what the Romans were thinking in all this. And to an earthly mind, to their minds, this all makes sense. Jesus is accepting his fate as our king, and he's gonna free us from the Romans. But in all this commotion, we see Luke record something that the disciples, that one of them notices this, and Luke records Jesus saying this in Luke chapter 19, verse 41. So you can just turn maybe a couple pages there. Luke chapter 19, verse 41, we see this. As he approached Jerusalem, this is Jesus, as Jesus approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it. He wept? I know the Romans are bad, but it's, you know, maybe he's crying with tears of joy. Let's see. He wept over it, and he said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." That's crazy. That's horrific. And so I'm sure the Romans are here, but it's not that bad, Jesus. Jesus is calling another shot. He's calling a shot into the future. Let's get a little bit of a history lesson here, and we will see all the more what he is talking about. Now, To get your context then, Jesus is entering Jerusalem in about the year 33 AD. Maybe you can give or take like 3 years in that. In the year 69 AD, Jerusalem is surrounded, completely hemmed in, just like he's talking about here, by the Romans and the leader Vespasian. And he's leading this Roman army because the Jews have revolted and they've kicked all the Israelites have kicked all the Romans out. And so the Romans are coming back to conquer Jerusalem and they completely surround the city. But something happens to Nero, the emperor, and so he's dead now. And so Vespasian goes back to Rome because he's going to be the new emperor, the Roman emperor. So he leaves, the army leaves. There's a kind of I don't know if it's a legend or not. It's something I've always kind of been taught, but I don't know quite where I got it from. It was that a lot of the Christians noticed this and remembered these words of Jesus and got out of Jerusalem at that point. But that might just be a big legend. I don't know. But then a year later, so that was in 69 AD, and a year later in 70 AD, Vespasian's son Titus comes back with an army and puts the whole town of Jerusalem to siege again. And this time, it's not just, you know, Vespasian just surrounded the city and then it was like, oh, gotta go, and so they left. But this time, he puts it to siege. It's a war. It's all out, an out war. And this is not recorded anywhere in our Bibles because our Bibles were not written before the year 70 AD. However, you can go into our church library here at the church, and you can't check it out. It's supposed to stay in the library for reference sake only, but you can pick up your volume of Josephus's works right there. We have it here, and Josephus was a historian who was a Jew, and he fought against the Romans in the first revolt, but then he gets captured, and so he's kind of like now they're using him kind of as a translator, and he's a historian. This is all stuff that he wrote, and now is translated. He writes it into Greek, but it's all been translated into English here. You can find this probably at most libraries, the works of Josephus. Now, I would not advise you to read it unless you can stomach some of the greatest atrocities known to man. He records just horrific things that are happening around the stench of bodies and plagues and starvations. It's horrible. I'm going to try not to sticker shock you, especially if maybe you have kids around. But there was nowhere for them to go. They were completely hemmed in and surrounded. And so you can imagine things got pretty hairy and dicey in there, even amongst them when they were just hungry. And the Romans, to kind of make it worse, this was again the Passover. So, of course, all the Jews from all over are trying to come to Jerusalem, and they let all of them in, but they don't let any of them out to kind of be a bigger burden on the resources. And so even quicker, the city just goes into chaos. And to even add on to that, what really made it so bad is that the Jews were busy fighting themselves. There were actually, Josephus records that there were three groups of Jews in Jerusalem that were fighting amongst themselves, and it was like gang warfare, and it was just horrible what they were doing to themselves, let alone, and that was before the Romans come, and then even when the Romans come, they could not be free from this. And then, to even add on top of that, the Jews became really stubborn. They keep on trying to say, hey, you should give up now. You should give up. The Romans keep on saying, you should give up. But they were looking for, the Jews in the town were looking for a Messiah who would free them from the Romans. You know, certainly God's going to come and just wipe out all these Romans at any time. And it's because they were looking for that with Jesus too, and that's why they missed Jesus. They missed Jesus in the first place. They missed that Jesus was there to free them from the bondage of their sin, not a bondage of a government. They kept expecting God to come and wipe out all of these Romans. And so because of that, that made them stubborn. And it made the Romans, because of their stubbornness, it made the Romans hate them all the more. They just wanted this war to be over with too, just like the Jews wanted to be over with. And so they were especially brutal when victory was finally granted to them. There are some spots I've marked in here. It gets really horrific. Now, I don't need to make everybody gasp or sticker shock here. You can imagine probably whatever you can imagine. It was probably worse than that. So let's jump back 35 years again. So we know that this happens. We know that what Jesus was talking about happens. Let's jump back to, and we see Jesus mourning this very event in history, and we aren't even done yet. That's Jesus calling his shot about the Roman Empire will come and surround it, and we have that record, not even in the Bible, but outside of that, of the Roman Empire surrounding it. In fact, they even make, in Rome, there's the archway that even celebrates their victory over conquering all of Jerusalem. But let's look even further at just a little bit after Jesus said that in Luke 19, just a little bit later in Luke 21, in verse 5, we see this. This is just a little bit later after he had entered Jerusalem, and he goes to the Jewish Israelite most holiest, most sacred, most loved place on all earth. The Jews and the Israelites, they love this place above all other place, the temple. The Israelite people would travel, like Jesus is doing right now, every year to worship and have a festival and celebrate at the temple in this city. This is the most sacred, holy place ever. And his disciples look to him and they say this, in Luke chapter 21, verse 5, some of his disciples were remarking about how the temple was adorned with beautiful stones and with gifts dedicated to God. But Jesus said, as for what you see here, the time will come when not one stone will be left on another. Every one of them will be thrown down. That's just like what he said in Luke chapter 19. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you. When the Romans conquer Jerusalem, when under Titus and they finally conquer all of Jerusalem, they set the temple on fire. Josephus records how this one soldier, even kind of against orders, sets the temple on fire. And all the gold all over the temple melts into the cracks. And Josephus records this, and I want to read this part to you. Now, as soon as the army had no more people to slay or to plunder, because there remained none to be the objects of their fury, for they would not have spared any had there remained any other work to be done, Caesar gave orders that they should now demolish the entire city and temple. Because they don't want this temple being rebuilt. They don't want the city being rebuilt and having to conquer it again. They're tired of having to conquer this. They're tired of the stubbornness of these people. But should leave as many of the towers standing as were of the greatest eminency. And so some people, he lists some people here. And so much of the wall as enclosed the city on the west side. This wall was spared in order to afford a camp for such as were to lie in garrison. So they're going to leave a little bit of a Roman garrison here. And so they're going to leave some of the wall there to kind of protect them as a little fort, not the whole city, but a little fort, as were the towers also spared in order to demonstrate to posterity what kind of city it was and how well fortified, which the Roman valor had subdued. But for all the rest of the wall, it was so thoroughly laid even with the ground by those that dug it up to the foundation that there was left nothing to make those that came there believe it had ever been inhabited. So they just lay it all bare. And except for the one wall that they want to leave as a fort, and also these towers, because they want to show, hey, they want people to walk by and see, yeah, the Romans, that big of a tower and that big of a city and that big of a wall couldn't stop the Romans. And so we see exactly what Jesus is talking about. This is the part where the dude perfect guys throw up their hands and start shouting and going nuts because Jesus called this. I want to go to Jerusalem myself and see this wall that was left standing for myself. Most everyone kind of knows about. It's called the Wailing Wall. It's a site where the temple used to sit. And that where the temple used to sit, there's now a Muslim mosque. And so the Jews can't even go to that spot where the Jewish temple used to be. They're not even allowed there. Only Muslims are allowed there to go and pray. But there's this one part of the wall, and it's not even a part of the temple wall. It's part of the wall of the foundation of the temple that's left there. And people go, they anybody can go. You don't have to just be a Jew. There is a part of it that where you have to wear a Jewish head covering to be able to enter it. But you can go and you can even write down prayers and put them into the cracks of the wall. But they call it the Wailing Wall because it's a reminder to all the Jewish people of this very siege that happened and how their whole city and their temple was destroyed. And so you can see kind of on this picture, even here, you see the Wailing Wall, and you can even see the mosque, the Golden Dome Mosque that's right up there, and you can see all the people praying here. And then I'm led to believe, I don't know, again, I haven't been there for sure, and even if I did, I wouldn't know if it was real or how real it was or not, but they say on this picture here that these stones were part of the stones from the temple and the wall that got chiseled off. And these ones were left there as, again, a solemn reminder of the tragedy of this city being just destroyed and decimated. I imagine most of those stones would have been used when the city had been rebuilt several times that it has been rebuilt, but maybe these were always left there and left there. The article definitely does say that these were part of the old Jerusalem. Now, I know you weren't expecting a history lesson today. I know you weren't expecting Josephus and this going back. But as we approach the only history that truly matters, Jesus' resurrection, we need to realize that if Jesus called this, and he called his death, and he called his resurrection, not even a little flatline death, and then like a ta-da, 3 seconds later, I've resurrected, but a 3 day later resurrection, then if he called that, then what else is he right about? What else is he right about? Is he right when he says in John chapter 14, verse 6, John records him saying, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Is he right when he says, and Matthew records him saying in chapter 11, verse 28, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Is he right when he says in John chapter 3, verse 16, John records him saying, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in me shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Do me a favor. If someone at your work or your school, they call their own death and resurrection, you would listen to that person. You would believe that person. So do the same for Jesus. But as we come to Easter, as we approach Easter, Jesus doesn't just want your belief. He's not a fairy that runs on belief to survive, like in Peter Pan. I do believe in fairies. I do. Like it's not that at all. He wants a people that go into all the world and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that he has commanded us. And surely he is with you always to the very end of the age. Go, be the church, pursue God, be the church wherever you do life.